Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Joy Powers. The Harley-Davidson Museum first and foremost tells the story of one of the most iconic brands on two wheels. While the majority of the artifacts and the vehicles on display are motorcycles, a new exhibit brings to light another pastime that places a lot of stock in going fast.
Drag racing, America's fast time, is about, you guessed it, drag racing, both on two wheels and on four. The exhibit is about more than speed and octane, though. It illuminates the place of drag racing in pop culture and also shows how the sport mirrors some bigger things going on in America. I had a chance to drop by the museum not long ago and spoke with a key person involved in the exhibit.
I'm David Kreidler. I'm the exhibits curator for the Harley-Davidson Museum.
Well, David Kreidler, tell me where we are right now. What is this building and what are we about to see?
We are in the garage, which is Harley-Davidson Museum's temporary exhibit space, and we're about to see drag racing, America's fast time.
Well, and this is drag racing. This is drag racing really of all kinds.
Yes, it is, and drag racing is of all kinds, but we cover both motorcycles and cars in this exhibit.
Talk about the phenomenon in a larger sense. What is it that you try to portray through this exhibit?
Well, you know, getting to this exhibit was an interesting road, because we started off with thinking, oh, we'll do something about speed, and Harley-Davidson speed, you know, we have different types of racing that the company sponsors and that our motorcycles are involved with. And drag racing was just one of them. And so I started looking into drag racing and began to realize there was more here than met the eye. You know, the initial, from a distance, looking at it going, oh, it's a motorsport. You know, it's probably like other motorsports. And then realizing that there was a lot of here. And one of the big things was its culture. It's different in that way. All motorsports, I think, have their own kind of unique cultures. But drag racing came out of hot rodding, which gave it a different flair entirely from other motorsports.
It also holds sort of a different place in the standpoint of pop culture as well.
Oh, yeah. I think that was another draw for us, because we've all seen drag races. Whether we've actually seen a real drag race is another question entirely. But in movies that we've seen, in television shows, whether we're talking about drag racing or its more nefarious cousin street racing, we've seen two cars or two motorcycles or whatever on a straight line, you know, race down the main drag, or you know, out in the country somewhere. We've seen those races in our televisions and our movies, in a lot of different places.
At its heart, it is really the simplest, most stripped down form of racing there is.
It is the simplest concept for racing. It is the most complicated, or one of the most complicated engineering feats to do, is actually pull off a good drag.
Well, let's check out the story arc you have on display here. Where does this all start?
Well, we start off kind of really looking at the quote-unquote real drag racing, not the drag racing that you see on your television, in your movies or whatnot, but actually taking a look at and introducing this complex and an extreme sport, because it is an extreme sport. On TV, it looks fairly mundane, fairly slow.
Except when they explode.
And exploding is part of that. But, you know, it's a really extreme sport. These guys, or these drivers, these men and women who race, are pushing bounds that are only recognizable in some cases to astronauts and jet fighter pilots, you know, that they're same kind of forces that they're putting their bodies through.
You're talking about the number of G's they're pulling.
We've got a nice little chart over here that says, well, you know, astronauts on takeoff, on liftoff, they experience 3.5 G's or something like that. Whereas drag racers racing in a nitro-powered top fuel car or nitro car or funny car will experience upwards of 5 G's, which is, you know, a whole different level. They're only doing it for a few seconds, but still, it's quite the intense takeoff.
It's a few more seconds than either of us is doing.
That's right, absolutely.
Well, and so right at the opening of the display here of the exhibit is a drag racing bike.
Absolutely. This is a top fuel bike. So top fuel, whenever you hear those words, those are all nitro-powered, and they're generally the fastest accelerating machines in whatever particular vehicle class they're going to be in. So there's top fuel bikes, and then there's top fuel cars. This is a top fuel bike. It's a double-engine Harley. This was the other interesting thing about drag racing, is that it still operates on a variety of different levels. You know, you got the pros up at like NHRA races or whatnot, but then you have everything down from that. And this gentleman who raced this bike was actually a farmer in Iowa for many, many years, and this was his kind of hobby.
Now, you mentioned something interesting as we were kind of setting this up. You talked about the men and women who do this, and that's something I've actually kind of noticed. I don't watch a lot of drag racing on TV, but, you know, it's late at night and you're channel surfing and they're the NHRA Nationals or whatever. And there are a lot of women that compete in this sport.
And they've been competing in the sport since, you know, near the beginning. Organized drag racing started in 1949, and the first commercial drag strip opened in 1950. And the first woman to race at the commercial drag strip was the owner of the drag strip. Her name was Peggy Hart, and she was racing. In fact, her husband, CJ, used to say, "Well, my girl can beat you," and she would, you know, generally.
All right, well, let's keep moving and hit some more of the highlights. I like these movie posters here.
Right, you know, hot rodders were kind of on the fringe of, a little bit more fringe of society. They were, you know, they cared about cars, and that's about it, you know, generally. they wanted fast-looking cars, and this is what they loved. This is what they wanted to do.
Drag strip riot.
Well, absolutely. You know, these movie posters are great, but their reputation they built among other people who were not hot rodders was that, oh, they like fast cars. It means they must be dangerous. It means, you know, I don't want my daughter/son or whatever, you know, messing around with this. And so there was this whole culture of where people got confused about what a hot rodder was. They were branded as teenage hellions out to, you know, destroy the communities that they lived in or whatnot. So you get these great B movies, all that hot rod gang, you know, and for the most part, hot rodders were interested in their cars. They didn't care about robberies or they weren't criminals. They were interested in their cars. So this was an unearned reputation. They did sort of, in some ways, reject a little bit of mainstream culture. You know, we talked about women being involved early on. There was a lot of racial equality in hot rodding and in drag racing. Early on, one of the early pioneers of drag racing was a team from San Diego called the Bean Bandits, who had taken a slur and turned it on its head, you know, reappropriated it for their own uses, called themselves the Bean. They were Mexican Americans, and they were at the forefront of figuring out some of the very early kind of leaps in drag racing technology.
What was the biggest challenge in pulling this exhibit together?
There were two challenges. One is there's a lot of material out there, and the other challenge is there's not a lot of material out there. You know, we talk about the bikes, the cars, those things survived pretty well. You know, somebody is able to find them and say, oh, well, I want that, or they kept them. But the smaller artifacts, the shirts, the jackets.
The ephemera, as
they say. The ephemera, yeah. Was harder to find. You know, luckily there's always, you know, I always say this, but in every exhibit, there's always someone who collects that. it's just finding that person who collects the smaller items. And luckily for us, we found him living in Pennsylvania.
Do you know, is there a drag racing tradition in Wisconsin aside from the fact that Harley is based here?
You know, there is actually. That's another interesting thing about drag racing over other motorsports. I think with other motorsports, generally, we can get a sense of geography of them. Not all the time, but a lot of them, you know, like NASCAR, for instance, for a long time was a southern thing. Even though it's spread beyond, it still kind of has that kind of connotations with it. With drag racing, however, it starts in Southern California. In fact, there's an official first race. The official first sanctioned drag race was in California in 1949. And so from that point on, they were able to say, well, this is when the birth of the sport is literally right now.
Or there's at least no Abner Doubleday
that's
question
right.
Here.
This is actually, they know who raced, and they know one of them was burning nitro, and the other one, and they know who won. That was the first quote-unquote legal official drag race. It spread rather rapidly after that. I mean, it started out in Southern California. Southern California has always been the hotbed. Still today, you can go to Pomona, California, and to the NHRA Motorsports Museum, go through their wonderful collection, go see the race at the Pomona where they started racing in 1953. But it spread rather rapidly. Here in Wisconsin, in fact, we have a long tradition of drag racing via the Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, which opened in 1955. You consider it started in California in 1949. By 1955, it's reached Wisconsin. And so it sprung up all over the place. In fact, the early days of the sport, you had East Coast and West Coast rivalries. Somehow the Midwest always gets left out of those things. But even then, we had, you know, quite a tradition in the Midwest of particularly of motorcycle drag racers. Just south of here in Kenosha, there was I'm gonna go ahead and call him a genius, John Gregory, who built a double-engine Norton called the Hog Slayer. which maybe I shouldn't have mentioned since being a Harley employee, but there, you know, also in Iowa, there was the, basically the father of the Sportster drag racer was Leo Payne, who was living in Iowa and mastered the Sportster, Harley Davidson Sportster engine as a means of drag racing. You know, so there's these traditions that sprung up all over the place. So it's a wonderful sport from that end, is that even though California is kind of its birthplace, it really doesn't have a traditional base of people where everyone came from.
Yeah, so I'm curious about this bike because it looks like something that I might have made.
Well, yeah, no, I doubt it. This is a motorcycle. At least it has two wheels, but the engine is a Chevy V8 that has been kind of turned sideways. This is the Widowmaker 7, which was the seventh bike with that name, with the same kind of concept, built by a gentleman from Michigan named E.J. Potter, who had the nickname the Michigan Madman. In fact, we have a great quote from him here. He built these exhibition vehicles, which were bikes that didn't run in competition, but ran for sheer entertainment of seeing someone do something ridiculous or dangerous. Or, you know, it's almost that phenomenon of Evel Knievel. You know, I want to see this guy jump a dozen buses because it could be a disaster. That could be really awesome
to see.
You
might see him die this time.
That's right. So that's where the tradition of jet dragsters come in. You start seeing the tradition of, you know, the wheelie dragsters, the little red wagon, Hemi under glass, you know, these things that pop a wheelie down a quarter mile. And then you had things like this, which were bikes with car engines on them.
And it's a car tire on the back.
It's a car. Well, yeah, yeah. You needed a car tire for a car engine, of course.
All right, let's find our way around to the other side here. There's a bike in front of us called the Beast.
Yes. The Beast ran at Santa Ana. And Santa Ana is the location of the first organized drag races. And they started running there in 1950, and the Beast started running there in 1950. So we're looking at one of the earliest drag vehicles of any kind.
But there's not a lot of superstructure on this thing. It does not look like something you would want to go that fast on.
Well, it was humming down the track at about 129. Which at the time was actually the fastest accelerating vehicle at the drags, period. In 1951, 1950, that was a record, 129 miles an hour, which isn't bad when you consider the cars would have trouble, you know, cracking 80 in a quarter mile. And here he is, you know, dropping the hammer down at 129 miles an hour. It's interesting from a different standpoint, though, in that Chet Herbert, the guy who built the bike, was actually paralyzed from the chest down. He had contracted polio when he was 20 years old. He'd been a racer before that. He'd ridden around in cars and bikes. But after contracting polio, he couldn't do it. But it is a testament to the sport because, again, with drag racing, it's a little bit different in that it's not about, you know, I think it's definitely a sport of brains as opposed to brawn. To figure out these kind of, to push these engines to their absolute maximum effort. Takes a lot of thought and a lot of imagination and a lot of ingenuity. That's what these drag racers in this era and for a long time were figuring out how to do. And they're generally doing it in their garages or somewhere else.
I gather this is a Don Garlitz drag racer that we're looking at right here.
Yeah, we're really lucky. You know, it's we're fortunate with this exhibit. Don lent us one of his cars, and he built something like over 30 cars that he called Swamp Rats. They all have the Swamp Rat nickname. And this is Swamp Rat 13. And I'm really, really, really excited about this car, having it up here, because this is the car from the accident. The accident occurred in 1970. The Swamp Rat 13 is a front-engine dragster, which means that the engine is sitting in front of the driver. These were getting to be problematic in the late 60s. They increased the power of the engine so much that parts started to fail on them. And one of the big parts that failed was either the clutch or the transmission. And generally when those things failed, they did something termed grenading, which is exactly what it sounds like.
There's a picture of this going on here.
You're right, yeah, exactly. The whole thing would just explode and act like a grenade, and all of a sudden the shrapnel would shoot out. And so with Swamp Rat 13 in 1970, Don's waiting in the final round of a competition, and he hits the gas, and the engine revs to 6,000 RPM, and then the transmission fails, shatters, cuts the car in half, so that he's actually, you know, this picture of him is he's at about a 90-degree angle to his to the ground, you know, so he's perpendicular to the ground at this point. And in fact, on the roll bar of this car, there's a dent that is where the roll bar hit the top of the engine. So it was a pretty incredible accident. It also really seriously injured him. He lost part of his foot, broke one of his legs. In fact, the other driver was nearly killed by a piece of shrapnel, and a boy in the crowd was hit by some too and was injured. And the mythology of this is he was in a hospital for 6 weeks and figured that they could no longer do front engine dragsters because his was not the first time this had happened. This had been going on for a number of years by this point with these clutches and transmissions exploding. And so he was thinking, well, you know, we really need to put the engine behind the driver. And so he actually figured out a way to do that successfully. He perfected that. There had been cars before that tried that, but there was always something wrong with the way it handled or it just didn't go as fast. And he figured out a way not only to take the engine and put it behind the driver, but to win doing it.
Is there something you want to leave people with when they finish this, when they finish going through this exhibit?
Yeah, I think that, again, that idea of ingenuity, it's been so surprising. Everything in the sport is actually surprising, from the diversity of the people who participate to the ingenuity, to the fact that even today, if you wanted to take your car, so for the listeners in Wisconsin, if you wanted to go down to Great Lakes Dragway and race in whatever car you got at home, you could do it. So it's just this nice, egalitarian sport with just a fascinating history and a fascinating culture.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Oh, no problem.
And would you ever imagine sitting in that?
No, absolutely not. You know. So thank you for having me.
David Kreidler is an exhibits curator at the Harley-Davidson Museum. Drag Racing, America's Fast Time, is open at the museum through September 5th, and you'll find a link to more about it at WUWM.com.